I can't tell you how many times over the last year I sit down with a good book and I'll call my wife over, my daughter, let me read this to you, and I can't get through it. I got to stop, I got to go blow my nose, got to come back, read a little bit. I just go grab a roll of toilet paper, sit in the chair next to me. Leave a big messy pile on the floor. Reading about men and women who have served, who have fought, their acts of bravery and their acts of kindness. One of my favorite books that I have read that moved me so much was a biography of a Navy SEAL who was killed in action. The name of the book was Fearless. And in the book, it talks about a number of different things, being in action, being pinned down, middle of the night in Afghanistan. They're going in against some insurgents. There's a vicious firefight going on. Then out of nowhere, this big bear of a man, there's women and children caught in the middle in the courtyard running around, bullets flying all around. So this big bear of a man jumps out of his perfectly secure position, runs out in the middle of firefight, grabs his women and children, and just starts throwing them over the wall to safety, risking his own life. That's what makes me proud to be an American. There's stories about Adam Brown when his wife called him about this time of year a few years ago, and he was actually in Afghanistan. He called his wife, and his wife said, "No, I'm just going to the store and putting together a Christmas package for you. What do you want?" And his reply was, "Baby, don't get anything for me. I want you to go to Payless. I want you to go to Target and buy all the shoes that we can afford, shoes and socks, and call my parents and my friends and tell them to do the same. Because here in the mountains of Kandahar, these kids run around barefoot and winter's coming. And every time I see these kids, I think my own kids back home." Another Army sergeant who was attached to their unit went on to talk about how they go outside the wire, and we're talking in the heavily fortified Taliban positions, right in the teeth of the enemy. Everybody's packing extra ammunition, extra hand grenades, and Adam Brown's got his rucksack full of shoes that he's handing out to kids. It's men like that, not only going into harm's way, but caring about the victims of where they're at, that makes me proud to be an American. I've noticed a common trait that runs through veterans who, as Roy preached a couple nights ago, he used the phrase, who have seen the elephant. I've noticed that men who have seen the elephant, who have seen combat, who have seen the worst that humanity has to offer, they almost invariably are humble. They almost invariably, when you congratulate them and you thank them for their service, there's a reluctance and almost an awkwardness to want to accept it. Just a few weeks ago, I was in a Walmart and I saw this man in the other line. And see, in the back of his cap, the embroidery was a Vietnam insignia, a service ribbon. So I chased him down the parking lot, went up to him and shook out my hand, kind of startled the poor guy, I think. He said, "Sir, I want to thank you for your service." And he immediately dropped his eyes, kind of looked over my shoulder, and he kind of dropped his eyes, and he looks me back and he says, "Sir, on behalf of my fallen comrades, I'll accept. Thank you." But almost every veteran that I've talked to that have seen that has seen combat, there's a humbleness to want to admit how blessed they are. Because I know in many of their minds, they're going back to friends that didn't make it, of sights that they had seen. They understand how blessed they are, how humble it is to be here, but also what it means to be an American, the price that was paid. They had a front row seat. But I've noticed that for all the books that are written, there's a whole lot more heroes out there that don't have a book. And that's why the title, or should say the theme of our service this year is Recognizing Our Heroes, No One Left Behind. That's kind of a theme that you hear in the military, No One Left Behind. It's not leaving a fallen comrade behind. We're going to get them out. If they're POWs, we're going to find them. If they're missing in action, we will have an account. We will find them. That ought to be our passion. That ought to be our cry. But we also have no veteran who has served feels left behind. I know I personally talked to a number of veterans who talked about getting off the plane in the late 60s, early 70s, and being spit upon as they returned from war. I don't grasp that. I don't understand how somebody could do that to another human being. But it's my goal here today, our goal as Calvary Gospel Church, that every veteran, if you're wearing our carnation, that when you leave here this morning, you'll leave here with your head high, with your chest out, that you will be proud to be an American, that you will be feeling appreciation for your service. And even those of us like myself, and I don't really feel honored or feel worthy to stand in the ranks of some of these men, because no one ever shot at me. My daughter asked me this morning, we were getting ready, Dad, do you ever go to war? And I was like, no, I never went to war. Nobody ever shot at me, baby. So, do you wish you would have? I don't think anybody wishes they would have. I mean, I'm not that dumb. However, I do believe that it is men and women that also serve in peacetime, that having a strong military is a deterrent to attack. And that's why it's important to, even in peacetime, to recognize our military. I mean, I was in Germany when the Cold War came down. A few weeks later, I went to Germany. I walked on the wall. I was there. And so I understand the importance of recognizing those also that weren't in combat, because they serve a role as well. We are all brothers in arms. There is a common bond. And so we appreciate you today. We appreciate your service. We appreciate you being there, willing to fight to keep your loved ones safe. At that note, I'm going to ask our ushers to come. People here. Pastor John Grant is not here. He is home this morning, not feeling well, with a sore back. But I appreciate our pastor. If those of you that are wearing a carnation, you understand the value of good leadership. Good leadership in wartime can be the difference between coming home and not coming home. So I appreciate good spiritual leadership. Let's appreciate Brother Rich Thomas. I don't see Sister Thomas, or Brother, I see Sister Thomas. Their Brother Thomas staying in the back, one of our assistant pastors, Marine veteran. Brother Roy Grant, one of our assistant pastors, this is his heart and his passion. Also, my wife, this is her passion as well. She loves doing this, and she's probably hiding in the back someplace. She doesn't like to be. She is hiding in the back, just ran out the door. And also the master of props and technical effects, special effects, I should say. Where's Tim Powell? Tim's hiding over there. Tim's hiding over here. This guy amazes me with his creativity. Now, on that note, later on in the service, kind of reached the climax, there will be things falling from the ceiling and popping out. Don't worry, it's harmless. At least we hope it's harmless. So I just kind of added the effect, the celebration. We want to set off some fireworks in here, but the fire marshal wouldn't let us. So we're going to try and do the next best thing. Oh, I didn't see you there. Come on in. Have a seat. Some iced tea? Hope you don't mind the sweat. Beautiful day out there, isn't it? Reminds me of a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday. My daughter asked me, I was outside working, and my daughter asked me, "Dad, why are you putting the flag up?" Well, she kind of caught me off guard, and I didn't really know exactly what to say. So I just kind of wanted to say, "Well, because I can," but that just sounded so flippant. So I just muttered something like, "Well, it's a nice day, and it seems like the thing to do." And she smiled and nodded and went back in the house. But, you see, I'm not always very good with words. I have a hard time expressing really what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. So later on, while I was mowing the grass, I was thinking about it. Her question, that is. And this is what I wish I would have said. I wish I would have said, "Baby, I'm putting up the flag because it's Saturday. And this afternoon, I'm going to mow my grass, in front of my house, the house that I own. Because I can do that in this country. I can own a house, and I can mow my grass." And maybe later on, we'll invite the Powells over for burgers. And Tim and I, we'll probably get in a good-natured argument about politics or something because, well, we can't seem to agree about much of anything. But that's okay because we can do that in this country. We can disagree about politics or religion or pretty much anything, and neither one of us has to worry about somebody coming in and hauling us off. That's why I put the flag up. And later on, we'll throw those burgers on the grill. Or maybe we'll go cheaper, hot dogs. Even if I can't afford a burger, I can afford a hot dog. Let's face it, almost everyone in this country can afford a hot dog. Because we've been blessed. Yeah, you heard me. We've been blessed. And that's why I put the flag up. And then tomorrow we'll go to church, of course. And you girls will stand up front and sing loud and pretty. You sound so beautiful, they'll give you microphones so everyone can hear you. And me, well, I'll sit back by your mom and think about how proud I am. Kind of mouth the words because, well, I don't have a very good voice. But I like to think about the words. But we can do that in this country. We can sing about God. We can talk about God. And nobody's going to tell us we can't. And I'm putting up the flag because while I'm there, I'm going to meet all kinds of friends. Friends that almost all of them, either they themselves or their ancestors, came to this country to find something better, to get a better education, to have a better future for their children. Especially men like Edwin Forkpaugh, who originally left his own country to come to this country because of persecution and genocide. But he's not just surviving. He's not just making it. He's thriving. He's making a difference. America is a better place because of men like him. And, well, that's why I'm putting the flag up. Putting the flag up because that kid that lives down the street that you went to school with is now a Marine. And I want his parents, when they drive by, to know that I'm proud. I'm putting that flag up because when Scott Polk or Danny Capaccio, who recently served in Iraq and Afghanistan, they drive by my house, I want them to know that I'm proud of their service. Putting up that flag because of friends like I've known, one of the best friends I've ever had, Roger Bell. I remember being in Germany when he got the phone call that his wife had given birth to their second daughter, Jennifer. And he was there with me, 1,000 miles away.
serving his country. Put that flag up because after I got out, Roger spent 3 tours in Bosnia, Iraq. Then after a few years, he spent going back to Afghanistan, then back to Iraq, then back to Afghanistan. And I put that flag up to symbolize my respect for men like Roger Bell who have done it, who have stayed in, who have served, who spent time away from their families. I also fly the flag for women like his wife, Chris Bell, who stood by his side. For Heather and Jennifer and Lauren, who have missed their daddy on Thanksgivings and holidays and birthdays because their daddy's been serving his country. Yeah, I put the flag up because it's a nice flag for a nice place. My place. And I'm glad that it is. It's not a perfect place, not by a long shot. But I agree with the former president of ours, Bill Clinton, when he said, there's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by what's right with America. I believe that. So I guess you can say that I put the flag up, well, sweetheart, because I can.
That the world was plunged into its first world war. This war would affect approximately some 70 million people would take and become casualties of this war. Over 9 billion servicemen and women would lose their lives in this war, as well as 11 million civilians. In 1918, the war came to an end with the signing of an armistice in France between the Allied armies and the German command. The armistice was to take effect. The fighting that had been going on for years was to take effect on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, hence 11-11-11, thus ending one of the bloodiest wars in the history of modern mankind. After the war, armistice was observed on this day of November 11th, and in many parts of the world, all around the world, right here today, there are many parts that are going to take within just a few minutes. They will be bowing their heads for a moment of silence. They actually observe a moment of silence, a minute of silence for the men and the women that lost their lives in the war, gave the ultimate sacrifice, and then a minute of silence for all of the families, the sons, the daughters, the mothers, the wives that it affected as a result of this war. So if you could at this time, if you could just take and bow your head with me for a moment of silence in observance for this great day.
clear, U.S. Navy, 67 to 71.
Thank you.
Deborah Relitz, U.S. Air Force, 1985 to 1990.
Scott Relitz, United States Air Force, 1985 to 92, United States Air National Guards from 2010 to present.
Gary Jensen, U.S. Army, 67 through 69, Vietnam, 67-68.
Lawrence Michaels, World War II, 101st Airborne Division.
Pete Ponte, United States Army, 1966 to 1968, Vietnam, 67-68.
Ted Krajewski, United States Marine Corps, 1984-1987.
It's Chris Krasky. I served in the United States Marine Corps 2007 to January 2012. Served in the U.S. Army from 2012 January to present.
Ben Thompson, served in the United States Army from 1986 to 1990.
Peter Sandin, served in the Army 1999 to 2007, Iraq 2002 and 2003.
Richard Thomas, United States Marine Corps. Vietnam, 1965-1966.
Philip Wiest, 1980-1991, U.S. Army.
Willie Burrell, U.S. Marine Corps, 1961-1968.
Dale Reynolds, U.S. Marine, 74-79.
Jeff Neeson, United States Navy from 1979 to 1983.
Perry Hicks, U.S. Army, 1978-1982.
Dion Kilpatrick, made Aquinas in 1952, United States Army.
Ricky Wells, United States Air Force. 78 to 2000, 115th Tactical Fighter Wing.
Mike Jordan, United States Army, Reception Station, Fort Knox, 68-70.
Ronnie Inla, United States Air Force, 53 to 57.
Linda Brown, medic, served in Baumholder, Germany.
Kevin Brown, U.S. Army, Baumholder, Germany.
Mike Van Buren, Air Force, 1985 to 1989, 1989 to 1991, U.S. Air National Guard, Wisconsin Air National Guard.
Richard Novak, U.S. Air Force, 1977 to 1997.
Ed Ezel, 1977 to 1984, Air Guard and Army Reserve.
Tim Merrick, I was stationed in Ops. I was basically trained in Ops in Marine and Army from 70 through 73, Army, National Guard.
Jeff Ezel, United States Army, 1988 to 1998.
Donnie Zell, Navy, 61 to 64.
Peter Kelly, United States Navy, attached to the attack aircraft carrier, USS John Hancock, Vietnam veteran.
Lawrence Conley, U.S. Navy, peacetime, AS-34, was my ship, USS Canopus.
Ben Alenius, USS Ronald Reagan, Operation Enduring Freedom, December 2008 to October 2009.
Jenny Rhein-Lasoda, United States Army, 64 to 66, Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Troy Oppenheim, U.S. Army and Army National Guard, 1985 to 1995.
Ken Krako, U.S. Army, 1983 to 1986, Frankfurt, Germany.
Ron Wittenbach, 1967 through 1970, U.S. Army, Vietnam.
Scott Polk, U.S. Army National Guard, 2001 to 2010.
Todd Ritchie, U.S. Army, 1982 to 1990.
Kerry Millen, 1984 to 2004, the United States Air Force.
Pat Huber, Vietnam, Cambodia, 68 to 71.
George O'Neill, U.S. Marine Corps, 67 to 72, Vietnam, 68, 69, 1st Marines, 2nd Battalion, and 3rd MAF.
John Brunker, U.S. Army, 1967 to 1970, 3rd and 84th Artillery.
These are our real heroes right here.